issues on your platter than us.
My apologies to Representative Close. She had a question, and I forgot before I asked further questions. So, Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Voitko, I'm looking at a piece sent out by Cascade Policy Institute where they got the opinion of Peter J. Ferrara, who's a national expert on pension reform. Maybe you're familiar with him. Anyway, he said that Oregon has the most complicated public employees pension system in the country because we have both a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan, and we can't calculate the retirement until people actually retire. Can you tell me, I'd like you to respond to his opinions on this, and also will you tell me what other states are doing, just maybe one or two other states, systems that you've looked at that might be of interest to us?
Chair Canope, Representative Close, I have not met the professor. I have read his report, other third-party reviewers of our plan have not put it as the most complex plan they've ever reviewed, but it's in the top 5 or 10%. So it's pretty complex, I think, by any measure, by external parties. So I would generally agree with that assessment. I've actually addressed this issue in a letter to Senator Nelson about the degree of predictability of our plan under both Tier 1, Tier 2, and et cetera, and I'd be happy to provide you with a copy of that letter. So I think it would respond so much better than my off-the-cuff remarks. With respect to what other states are doing, it all depends on the kinds of changes they're making appear to depend a great deal on what their elected officials believe is the problem. In the case of Nebraska, for example, they felt that their benefits were inadequate. And so they altered their plan in a way that enhanced both the predictability and the potential size of benefits. In the case of Michigan, they felt their plan was too expensive for the state to bear, and so they changed the structure of their plan, at least according to industry reports, to try to control the total costs of pension coverage. So it depends on the problem that elected officials see in the pension plan as to what the solution will be. We'd be happy to provide a variety of kinds of responses that other states have had. I think that they're all over the lot depending on the problem that their particular legislature believed exists in their plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? I have a couple of questions. Jim, I think last time we talked about the fact that this only applies to new hires, at least the date in Section 4. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding, Chair.
I had a conversation with a public employee, and I'll just, you know, I won't use her name, but let's call her CD. And she's not in the music industry, by the way. She actually is a public employee. And CD was concerned that her retirement benefits, you know, might be drawn into this. And we've had a lot of people that are concerned that maybe misunderstand what this bill actually does. It creates a task force, and it encourages you guys, actually it demands you guys come forward and bring us some alternatives for successor plans, one that includes the defined contribution plan. By, I think, October is the date that's in the bill. And is that doable from your perspective, that you can bring us some plans that we could look at by October?
Chair Canope, I believe we could bring you the broad outlines of plan structures that would attach to various objectives and give you an idea of why that plan structure serves this particular objective more than that one, so that you could get a general understanding about how plan structures relate to pension objectives that you might feel is important. We would not be able to bring to you a complete programmatic definition of each and every particular alternative.
But as it relates to CD, the public employee who has, you know, a young child and is concerned about, you know, her retirement benefits, any of those plans that you would bring forward be for new hires, so therefore it wouldn't affect CD's benefits in any way. It wouldn't dilute those benefits in any plan that you'd bring forward.
Chair Canope, as I understand, this legislation is about a process. It does not determine in any way what the successor plan is, and it seems to indicate that the successor plan would be for new hires. So I would distinguish between the substantive outcome, which is what is a successor plan if the legislature goes there, versus the process, which is embedded in this statute, which says by date certain the discussion is supposed to move forward. This is a commonly used a date certain is a commonly used process tool, whether it's in labor strike deadlines or statutes of limitation. Sometimes you draw a line in time in the sand and say, this is the time by which action needs to be taken. Whether it's a good idea or a bad idea is really not my call to make. That's your call to make. But it's not an uncommon process issue. But it does not in and of itself determine what the successor plan is, whether it's right. extraordinarily beneficial to some parties or not so. That's doesn't say anything about that.
But just, I mean, just but even still, you're not going to bring a plan forward that would affect the benefits of somebody who's already in the system, mainly because that's not what we're asking for.
We would not bring forward a plan that you did not specify in the legislation.
So CD, I think, could be assured, and along with other public employees, that their benefits under this particular bill aren't affected in any way, and that this particular bill is for people who are going to be newly hired after July 1, and I think we've seen a commitment that if there was no plan in place for a successor plan, that the current plan would be extended.
Chair Canope, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I sent an email out to my own staff today indicating that the current program and the one that they were working on was not at issue per se in this legislation, but the pension policy in effect for new hires seems to be what is in question before the legislature in this bill.
There's also a question in regards to, I know we've talked about it before, but Tier 2, there is maybe some cloudiness in whether Tier 2 is in debt as we believe Tier 1 is in terms of unfunded liabilities. Do we know when we're going to have financial data on Tier 2 separated out so we could look at that to see, in fact, what the problems are, and are those problems significant?
Chair Canope, two things I would say to that. One is that we have at least partially addressed that question, again, in a letter in response to a question from Senator Nelson. Two is our plan valuation is due in roughly September, October of this year, and there will be some information in that bearing on this question, and we'd be happy to report to the legislature. And three is that we are currently working on an expanded simulation, year-by-year simulation of the PERS statute and its programmatic expression, if you will, and the financial consequences. We are hopeful that that will also be ready approximately that time frame, September, October, and we would assume that the various task forces looking at PERS would be interested in our work, presuming that it passes our stress tests.
The mortality tables, as it relates to LC62, would it be helpful for the PERS board to have a decision on what's possible in terms of the mortality tables? I know you in the past have said that likely anything that you do, you'll get sued over if it's a major policy issue as it relates to PERS. The mortality tables are clearly a significant policy issue for the PERS board. Does it help to get some finality? I think the only person who can give us that, or people who can give us that, is the Supreme Court. So as it relates to LC 62, is that helpful to have that issue resolved?
Well, Chair Canope, let me be very direct. I have said before in testimony that I believe I reflect the view of the board that a clear and unambiguous statute is very helpful to us carrying out our mandate from the legislature. You know, the pros of getting a firm decision is quite clear. We dispelling legal uncertainty in a program of this magnitude that affects this many people is unquestionably a good thing. Sooner is better, and particularly because a pension system has no pause button. Each and every day we're retiring people, hiring people, paying out people, taking contributions. We have no pause button. We have to keep going. And the second is money match. One of the unusual things about money match is it is a compounding system. So an error made or a judicial decision that something was done incorrectly in 1998 means that 1999 is wrong and 2000 is wrong and 2001 is wrong. So therefore, certainty and legal certainty and legal certainty sooner, I think, is clearly a good thing, because retrospective remedies of that sort are very difficult to execute. The only con that I would say is that one has to be sure that if you have an expedited process, that the decision and the knowledge that's presented to the Supreme Court is sufficiently developed in depth, that it's a comprehensive record that has been created so that the matter of law that's presented to the Supreme Court is fully developed. And certainly I know that the PERS board would try to do so to the fullest extent possible, but that's the only con that I would put in place.
Do you know when the PERS board is planning to make a decision as it relates to mortality tables? Do you have a timeline?
Chair Canope, there's not a date certain. The PERS board has been working on this issue, as you know, for years, and has particularly been working hard on it in the last 12 months. The decision is at the board level at present time. There are two options being discussed by the board. One has been recommended by the subcommittee of the board. The board has, with respect to timetable, there are two factors that have slowed things down. The board has asked us to seek an opinion of some sort from the IRS about the definition of accrued benefit and its application or non-application to our plan. We don't know how long that would take. It's going to take at least 60 days from today, but it could take quite longer because the IRS does not have to respond to us. The second question is, the board was cognizant of the fact that the legislature was interested in potentially taking up the issue in the special session, and the PERS board has historically deferred to the legislature on matters of policy like that if it appeared as though the legislature was potentially prepared to act. So I can't give you a date certain, but I know that if the legislature does not act, I'm sure they'll return to this work post-haste.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hass.
Thank you. When you say you're hoping for some clear direction, are you talking about the draft in LC 62, or are you talking about legislation that addresses mortality tables?
Chair Canope, Representative Haas, that was a generic comment. With the statute now running 64,000 words and with lots of different parties believing different aspects of the statute say different things, I think that it's fair to say that clarity in any part of the statute is better than some of the issues that we're wrestling with at present.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
Would you hope that the legislature addresses mortality tables specifically in some language that's not here? Would that in some way sort of build a fire under the board, which for whatever reasons for many years hasn't taken action on this?
Chair Canope, Representative Haas, it's not my intention to build a fire under anybody, and I don't really have any hopes beyond getting through the day. But in all seriousness, this is really a decision that the legislature needs to make. The board, as I best understand the law in working with our attorneys, the board does have the authority to make this decision, subject to judicial review. So to the extent that the legislature chooses to let that process, with the existing guidance that's in the statute being the sole message that the legislature sends to the board, then so be it. We take the existing statute as the sum total of our instructions from you. So we would proceed, I believe, along the lines of taking the existing statute, and if the board chose to make a decision, it would be on that basis. If you chose to, I'm not asking for recommending or in any other way suggesting that you should or shouldn't provide additional guidance. Legislature chose to do so with respect to earnings crediting and Senate Bill 134 last session. Whether you choose to do so or not is really a decision on your part. I'm not hoping for any or asking for any.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to an issue when you're talking about timelines, and I can frame it in new language, date certain. The date certain in the legislation is that you have some possible ways to do this back to us in October, and you have testified even before when we met that many of the things you're doing by hand now because the computer system is so outdated. The next date certain is when the legislature starts in January, And having only been here a short time, but I see things don't move quickly, I can't imagine that any legislation that is introduced in mid-January about an issue this complicated is going to be out of here before whatever the closing date might be. And so my question is there any way in the world that this could actually be implemented and up and running by July 1, 2003?
Chair Canope, Representative Hobson, I'm not going to comment on the efficiency of the legislature and its ability to process issues. You're far more expert on that than I am. I did, when I looked at this particular date, ask myself the following questions. Is a decision-making forum available at all between now and the date certain? And there is a regular session planned. If there had not, I would be asking you the question, exactly how are you going to deliver this instruction to us? In addition to that, of course, there are the several task forces that are generating information. So at least in that respect, a decision forum and information generating process is in place. Is it feasible to create alternative potential plans? Certainly, it depends then on how complex or simple the structure. There are such a thing as off-the-shelf pension plans. How fast they could be implemented, I would have to go and do some serious homework. But simple plans, have constructs that are well understood and can be put in place relatively quickly. Complex ones that are highly proprietary, I make no promises as to how fast we could put something in place. The third thing I asked myself is that if there was a decision by the legislature to move to a successor plan, but the details had not, there had been consensus not reached on the details, is there a way to avoid the kind of gap that some of your previous witnesses talked about? And it seems to me that simply extending the deadline and allowing people to continue to enter the existing plan is available to you. You also have other plans like the deferred compensation program that would allow for at least limited retirement savings to go on. So those are the only facts that I would put on the table. As to whether or not it can or can't be done, I'd be happy to go back and do some homework on how quickly generic plans could be put in place and actually put in place to work. But as far as whether or not the date certain is the right one for you, again, that's a decision that you need to make on your own as to how fast you believe consensus needs to be reached or can be reached.
Thank you.
And, of course, that date, since we're going to be in session, could be changed if we ran up against it. Other questions for Jim? I'd love to keep on the hot seat a while longer. I'll tell you what, why don't I take a motion to introduce LC 52-1 as a committee bill? Do I hear that motion?
So moved.
Representative Close moves that we introduce LC 52-1. Any objections? See no objection. We'll introduce this LC. This particular LC directs Legislative Administration Committee to prepare legislation implementing retirement plans for persons who commence term of office in Legislative Assembly on or after July 1, 2003, or who are appointed to the Legislative Assembly on or after July 1, 2003. So this bill essentially is the bill that takes legislators out of the PERS system. Is there anyone who wishes to testify on LC 52-1? Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair.
Did you have any comments to make about this LC since we worked on it?
Well, just the intent of LC 52-1 would be that we could, demonstrate to the public as well that, one, that the PERS system is a non-sustainable system in its current form, and that legislators have taken the first step to be responsible in taking themselves out of the public employee retirement system should that have to happen, and should we not be able to go forward with LC 56. There is some opposition, though nobody's willing to come testify as to their reasons for opposition to any great extent about LC 56 other than what was received the other day. But I know there's lots going around in back rooms and lots of lobbying going on. And so, LC 56 would include legislators as well as everyone else who is on the PERS system. But maybe it's time. Should we choose not to take leadership role as legislators to at least demonstrate to the public that we're at least trying to be responsible?
But LC 52-1, which will soon have a bill number, only applies to legislators.
That is correct. It only applies to legislators.
And current legislators, whether senator or representative, would still be allowed to be in PERS until the end of their term?
Until the end of their next term in which they were elected, they would be able to be in PERS to deal with some of the contractual rights issues that are out there. But assuming that a legislator's contractual right extends from term to term, so in the House it would be every 2 years, that would be our contractual right period, and the Senate it would be every 4 years would be their contractual right period. So consequently then, because senators would be midterm, some senators would be midterm, they would be allowed to continue as well as representatives that were currently on the system.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hass.
Any estimates on how much this would save the system?
We're having fiscal work on that, so we don't have a fiscal back on it yet. Obviously, since there are only 90 legislators, it's not going to be a huge impact money-wise. I think, however, the impact is more with public accountability and credibility as it relates to this bill. It likely will save money, there's no question, but it's just how much. Most legislators don't end up with large accounts taking a money match and so on, like maybe other public employees would, because most of us aren't here, especially if term limits continues to stay around. Most of us won't be here for more than 12 years at a maximum. And one of our members actually spoke to this particular bill and said that after 12 years of service, I think he was a tier one employee and he gets about $457 in gross pay for retirement. But when he took out his Medicaid or Medigap deal, that he was down to $350 or something like that in terms of what he actually gets. So overall, it's not a huge issue in terms of the budget, but I think it's a significant issue as it relates to the public and their confidence in the legislature on this issue. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did not have a problem with introducing this as legislation, but I do have a lot of questions about this proposal, and specifically, since we've got two existing task forces on PERS, one that you chair very capably, I'm sure.
Thank you.
And then we're creating a new one in another piece that we introduced today, and now we have yet another process, and I have to clarify that the legislation I'm looking at does not eliminate PERS for legislators. It simply says there will be a successor retirement plan. So it would seem to me that we're setting up an awful lot of different venues to be looking at different plans that will still be administered and funded by the taxpayers of Oregon. And it seems to me a pretty expensive and not necessarily very efficient way of going about looking at reform. This particular proposal is charging the Legislative Administration Committee, so that would be yet another place where this discussion would take place with adopting a successor plan for legislators.
Representative Rosenbaum, if you would vote for LC 56, that would include legislators as well. And so that would eliminate the need for this particular bill. So we could cut down on the amount of overhead or expense or another possibility if we passed LC 56.
So, Mr. Chair, now I'm really confused. We have two different proposals, but LC 52 would go away if LC 56 were to pass. Is that correct?
Well, LC 56 applies to legislators as well as all public employees, all people who could be members of PERS. So that essentially would apply to members here in this body.
And Mr. Chair, the task force that is currently existing and has been meeting, does that preclude the possibility of addressing all these issues in that task force?
Not necessarily. Now that we have the opportunity for a special session and the legislature to make their voice heard on PERS, and the speaker has at least allowed us to meet as a committee and introduce these bills and have a discussion about them, it gives us an opportunity to pass the bill as it relates to PERS. I don't know about you, but my constituents are definitely interested in this issue more than they ever have been. I get a lot of email, and maybe it's just because I'm the chair of the committee, I don't know, but and I have asked for public input as it relates to PERS, so I appreciate whether I get your constituents and the City Water Department, which I've gotten several emails lately, or my constituents who are interested in PERS. I'm looking for any and all input as it relates to what fixes people think are possible, important, doable for the PERS system.
Well, Mr. Chair, final comment from me, hopefully, for today. I appreciate.
Sure,
well, I always
I
reserve the right
to
free speech.
Okay.
I certainly am aware that PERS is a topic that needs addressing, and I think probably everyone in this room is also aware of that. My concern, though, is that we are in LC 56 creating a task force calling for per diem for, by my count, 12 members of the legislature to attend meetings while we are sitting here in this building trying to deal with an $860 million problem. And it doesn't seem to me of benefit to my constituents or anybody else's to be calling for more per diem when we're being daily reminded of how much it's costing to be sitting here in meetings like this.
Will you vote for the bill if we take the per diem out?
If you don't, take the per diem out.
I'm taking that.
I already said I'd made my last comment.
Well, we're not going to hold you that. I already told you. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that, you know, while it may be, it may cost us a little bit of per diem to deal with the PERS issue, when my local county is being hit with bills for $14 million, they're asking it. They don't care about a $85 a day per diem for state legislators. You know, I think we're in a time where there's been a request to do some funding increases, tax increases, revenue increases, and the reason that I felt this issue was important and pushed hard to bring these issues forward is because I think it's irresponsible. I think it would be irresponsible of the legislature in light of the concerns around PERS, the unfunded liability to local governments and the state of Oregon, to go out and ask taxpayers in Oregon to vote for measures which increase revenue without at least addressing substantively, with a date certain, an issue that is on Oregonians' minds. This LC 56 would give Oregonians some certainty in light of the fact that we're passing tax increases and burdening Oregonians with even more taxes, which they have to pay. You've heard the cities and counties who came before us today to talk about the fact that they need some relief, that they'd like a date certain, that they'd like an opportunity to make sure that this issue gets addressed. And that's why I pushed so hard on, from my perspective on the issue, is I think we need to deal with the issues. I don't care, you know, a lot of us are sitting here, there's not a lot going on in the building, we've been sitting around waiting for the Senate. And so, you know, I think it's substantive that we move these particular issues to the forefront and at least let the public know that we're trying to address substantive problems. We only have an $11 billion state budget and an $8.5 billion unfunded liability in PERS. That's a significant issue for Oregon that we can't continue to delay.
Representative Hass.
Thank you. I just am wondering, I mean, I really don't have any quarrel with task forces or expedited lawsuits, but I don't, when I look at these, I don't see any action here. I mean, I don't, when you talk about this $8 billion problem, I don't see how a task force or how speeding up the legal process gets at that problem. And the only thing that I've seen that really gets at that in a small way is adjusting the mortality tables, and that is the one piece that's lacking here. So I don't understand why that isn't a component of this and why we're leaving that out and just hoping that the PERS board gets to it down the road.
Well, Representative Hass, I think there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not the legislature intervening at this point may interrupt the process as it relates to the mortality tables, which is an ongoing lawsuit. If the legislature did act on the mortality tables, any public employee out there can sue who believes they've in some way been damaged by whatever decision that we make. And, you know, whether it's likely that happens or not, I don't know, because I can't speak for the 293,000 people out there who are currently in this system, which I think is about one out of 10 Oregonians essentially are, have a PERS account. Mm-hmm. But I'm not opposed to looking at the mortality table issue, but I know there are folks who can't come to an agreement on whether we should do a multi-segmented blend, a five-year wear away, or as some people say, the full meal deal for a savings of $1.5 billion that some people hope that there is in the system. But ultimately, that issue, I believe, has to be addressed by the Supreme Court at some point, and I think the sooner that happens, the easier it is for us to resolve. At least we know what the boundaries are for resolving the mortality table issue.
If I could just follow up, Mr. Chairman, sure. That's, I think, why we're to make those tough decisions. They haven't been resolved. You have to make a tough call and come down and maybe irritate someone or make somebody happy, but that's why we're here. Task force votes are easy. We have more task forces than we probably have PERS members in this state. And I mean, these are fine, but I don't see any action here. And your constituents, you said, want you to come down here and address this problem. And I'm not so sure if you went back and said that we've appointed a task force, that they're going to think that you addressed this problem.